This is the BBC World Service. Dilip Ratta is a migrant who's just been visiting the Indian village where he grew up. Sindhekela, in the Indian state of Orissa, is about as different as you can get from Washington, D.C., where Dr. Ratta works today as a senior economist at the World Bank. He's just published a book on how much money migrants remit or send back to their home countries. Indeed, since calculating a few years ago just how vast the global total of migrant remittances is, it's now thought to exceed $300 billion. Dilip Ratta has been described as, quote, the man who put remittances on the map. But with those financial benefits of migration come human costs, as I've been hearing from Dr. Dilip Ratta, who first described how different Sindhekela today is from when he grew up there.
I have been away from Sindhekela for 30 years, and this was the first time that I nearly missed my house, my home, actually. I could not recognize it because the road has been paved and it was a good 3.5 feet taller than before. So all the houses looked a little shorter. The other thing I noticed was that all the houses in my neighborhood have changed from mud and clay houses to brick houses. And I felt that the village has grown by a good 30% or 40% in all respects. I was surprised to find that there were no children without shoes. Everybody was wearing clothes and wearing shoes. That wasn't the case even 3 years ago. The other interesting change I noticed was that there were no bullock carts. They had been replaced by tractors. So a dramatic change, I thought, in the positive direction. If I go back 30 years to the days when I was a student in the local high school there, we did not have electricity then. We did not have any cars. There was only one person with a moped, not a motorcycle, but actually a moped. And there were only two buses one could use to get out of the village.
Why did you leave? Was it particularly to pursue an education?
I basically went away from the village in pursuit of higher education and better opportunities that might bring.
Clearly your academic prowess, which enabled you to climb up this academic ladder, came at some cost to your family.
It did. The cost was both human and financial. The human cost was quite unbearable, I must say. One is sort of rooted where one is born. It was hard for me to go away. I was 16 when I left my village. I was not yet 16, actually. The hardest part was separation from my mother, for understandable reason. But also, there was a financial cost to it, because my father wasn't really earning a lot of cash. We were not the poorest in the village, and we were doing reasonably okay in terms of basic survival needs. But we really did not have cash, which is what I needed to go to college. Thankfully, I was able to get scholarship. Because we had the hope of getting some money in the end of the year, that in a way persuaded my father that it was worth sending me. Not to say that he did not want me to go to school. He did want me to go to school and do very well in life, like all fathers do. But in his case, it was a question of not having enough money to send me to expensive cities.
Was that financial cost always seen as an investment, that the higher you climbed, the more successful you were, the more benefits ultimately would flow back to your community, your family?
Not really, because it wasn't always certain that I would get a very good job if I went to the university. The point was that they were cash strapped. And in fact, for my master's education, I was given a certain amount of money for the train fare and for the first month. And after that, I had to actually fend for myself. And that wasn't easy in India, you know, for somebody coming from Orissa, from a village who spoke English in a funny way, was probably talented, but not coming from a university that was recognized in Delhi. It wasn't easy for me to find a job.
Now, you climbed the academic ladder, you were clearly very successful, and today you're a senior economist at the World Bank. So clearly one, you could regard yourself as an exemplary story of migration success.
Yes, in a way I have been lucky that I have landed on my feet. My first job after my PhD was at the Indian Institute of Management. At some point I decided that I wanted to come to the United States, and I gave up that job and came to the United States with nothing.
Let's come back to Sindhikela, where you've just been after an absence of 3 years, and as you've described, it's very different today from when you grew up there. Now, I would imagine that many of the differences today are because people like yourself, some of your siblings, other people from that area have been remitting money from abroad. Is that why Sindhikela today is so different?
In part, that is true. In part, I say, because there are not many people from Sindhikela who are abroad, but there are a large number of people who are now migrating to Delhi or Bombay or Hyderabad.
So internal migration as opposed to international migration.
Exactly. And I think that money that coming in has changed Sindhikela in a positive way, in two directions. One is simply adding to the material well-being of the people, but also the fact that these poor people who are typically from a lower caste, who are not treated very well in the society, go away and they are treated like equals. And they come back with a sense of pride, a sense of rediscovery of the self.
So there are, from what you're saying, social benefits from migration and remittances. What about downsides, though? I mean, you said earlier that as you left, there was the pain of separation from your parents, particularly from your mother. As the years roll by, does that pain get any less? Do you find yourself ever more distanced from the people, you know, your own people?
Yes, I do. In a way, there was a turning point in my life when my mother passed away in 1983. I was in the university then. When she passed away, I felt that my roots were somewhat cut off. I mean, I'm still very attached to my family and to my father, but my mother was definitely the root that sustained me. And after her departure, I felt that I was free to go and explore. When I'm sort of, you know, lonely or sometimes nostalgic, I'm thinking about Sindhikela and the way of life there. And it's strange because, you know, it's not really a place where you have a lot of conveniences of modern day life, and yet the place attracts me.
The cost of migration to you, really personally, I mean, you're based now at the World Bank in Washington, you're married, as I understand it, to a woman from Venezuela, your kids are growing up in the United States. Is there for you ever now a way back to Sindhikela, or basically is that it, you will never be able to go back permanently, and that is the cost you have to pay?
It's a dream that I would like to go back to Sindhikela. I want to be able to go back to Sindhikela back and forth a bit more. One thing that I have noticed, to my surprise, my children actually like my village very much. They like the freedom and the attention they get in Sindhikela when they go there. The weather is nice. They don't have to put on a lot of clothes to go out. There is not much traffic yet. In fact, they do fall sick every time we go, but despite that, they like the place. So I'm hoping that they would have a sense of attachment to Sindhikela as well as they grow up to be man of the world.
And that was Dilip Rata, an expert on migrant remittances at the World Bank. During